the divine souls. So far in this series on the significance of doing devotion to Radha Krishna in Kali Yuga, we've understood some main important points. Number one, every soul wants perfect happiness, and that happiness is only God. Number two, we can only attain God while we're in a human life form, so we have to do it in this life. Number three, even though the scriptures tell us that that is our true goal, to know God, yet no one can know God, because God is beyond human intellect, since He's divine and our mind is material. However, if someone receives God's grace, then they can know Him. So that's the only way. In other words, we can't know Him on our own, but if we receive His grace, then only we can know Him. All of those souls in the past who received God's grace did something in order to receive it. Otherwise, if there was nothing, meaning there wasn't some condition that had to be fulfilled in order to receive God's grace, then everyone should have received God's grace long ago. But we haven't. But many, many souls have. So it means there's some condition that was fulfilled by those souls who became God-realized, and we haven't yet fulfilled that condition. So we also learned that that condition is surrender. We have to surrender to God in order to receive His grace. I left you with a few questions yesterday, one of which was, if we have to do something to receive God's grace, we have to fulfill some condition in order to receive His grace, then does it mean that His grace is not causeless? He wants something from us first, then He'll grace us, like a trade, like we're somehow paying for His grace? Is that what it means? No, that's not what it means, and to understand this, we'll look at surrender from a couple of different angles. The first thing to understand about surrender is that surrender means kuch nahi karna. Doing nothing is surrender. What is doing nothing? It means like if I lie on the couch and close my eyes, I'm doing nothing. No, because your mind is still running. Even thinking is doing something. So what is doing nothing, and why is that considered surrender? To understand this, let's go into the Gita. And we'll look at the famous conversation between Shri Krishna and Arjuna and understand that when Krishna is telling Arjuna to surrender to Him, what He's telling him is do nothing. In the beginning, Arjuna didn't want to fight the war. Gandivam sransate hastatvakchaiva paridahyate nacha shaknomyavasthatum bhramativa chame mana. He says, "Oh Govinda, oh Krishna, my bow, Gandiv, is slipping out of my hands. My skin is burning, my mouth is dry, my body is shaking. I don't even feel like I can stand anymore. Why? Because I don't want to fight against all these people, my elders, my family members. Na yotsya iti Govindam." And having said so, having said, "O Govinda, I will not fight," he threw down his weapons and slumped in the back of the chariot. And yet, at the same time, even though he's saying, "Na yotsya," I will not fight, and he gave all of his reasons why. At the same time, he's also saying, "Karpanya dosho pahatasva bhava prichhamitvam dharma sammoodha cheta." Yachreya syanishchitam bruhitanme shishyaste ham shadhimam tvam prapannam. He's also saying, Krishna, I am your prapanna shishya. I am your fully surrendered disciple, so you please advise me. What is the best thing for me to do? Because I'm confused. So on one hand, Arjuna is saying, I will not fight. And on the other hand, he's saying, but I'm your surrendered disciple, so you please tell me what to do. So Sri Krishna started by saying, you know, Arjuna, if you don't fight, it's called vikarm. It's a bad action. Because your dharma, as a kshatriya, your duty is to protect the citizens and uphold the law, uphold the dharma. And if there are those who are doing adharma, you have to make them stop. That's your role in the society. That's your duty. So Duryodhan and those who are supporting him are on the side of adharma. So you can't let them keep doing whatever they want. If they're not going to listen to reason, you have to use force to make them stop, just like a police officer has to use force to make a criminal stop. Very simple. So if you don't do that, you choose not to do that just because of your emotional attachment to them, that will be considered pap, and you may have to go to Narak as a punishment for that. So Arjun, here's one reason that you should fight the war. If you don't, you may have to go to Narak. And if you do fight the war, hato va prapsyasi swargam jitva va bhokshyase mahim tasmad uttishth kaunteya yuddhaya kritanishchaya. Arjun, if you do fight the war, then if you happen to be killed in battle, you'll go to Swarg, the opposite of Narak. Why? As a reward for doing your dharma. And if you survive the battle and you win, then you'll enjoy the kingship of this earth. Punyena punyalokam nayati papena papa mubhabhyameva manushyalokam. Mundaka Upanishad. If you do good actions, then you're rewarded by going to Swarg. If you do bad actions, you're punished by going to Narak. And if you do a mixture of the two, you're reborn here in Mrityulok. So after giving this reasoning to Arjun is thinking, well, I know I don't want to go to Narak. And I've already expressed that I'm not interested in the happiness of this world. Nakanche vijayam Krishna nacharajyam sukhani cha. He already told Sri Krishna that I'm not hankering for the pleasures of this world. That, oh, I want to win the war and become the king, rule all of this earth, and enjoy all the pleasures that come with that. I have no such desire. I don't even have a desire to be the victor in this battle. It doesn't matter to me. In other words, Arjuna is already detached from the pleasures of this world, and he knows he doesn't want to go to Narak. So he's thinking about Swarg. Is it worth going there? Shri Krishna says, Te tam bhuk va swargalokam vishalam chine punye martyalokam vishanti evam trayi dharma manuprapanna gata gatam kama kama labhante. Swarg is also temporary happiness, because Swarg and Narak are both part of Maya. Swarg is a higher plane than this physical place where we are here, this Mrityulok. The pleasures over there are refined, elevated. but it's still all mayic. Abrahma bhuvana loka punaravartino arjuna. He tells Arjuna that all the way up to the topmost celestial abode is all mayic, temporary, not everlasting. Even those abodes don't last forever. So if you go over there, there's no everlasting happiness. The happiness there is also mayic pleasure. It's not divine bliss. So now Arjuna is understanding, okay, all three of those places are under maya, meaning narak, mrityulok, and swarg. So swarg sounds like an A-class jail, mrityulok B-class jail, and narak C-class jail. But all three are jail because they all keep me within maya. So I don't want to go to any of those places. This is what he was thinking. Then Krishna told him, okay, Arjun, now we've come to the right spot where I can explain to you the real thing. So what I want you to do, what I'm recommending, okay, the action of not fighting the war, even though you would think not fighting the war isn't an action, right? No, it is. Not doing the right thing is doing the wrong thing. So not fighting the war is an action. So Krishna says, the action of not fighting the war, don't perform that action. Okay? The action of fighting the war, don't perform that action either. Now Arjuna is thinking, how do I do? I either have to do one or the other, right? I'm either going to fight the war or I'm not going to fight the war. Krishna says, no, 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 no. Yasya naham krito bhavo. Naham krito bhavaha. You have to have the feeling of non-doing. It means, don't... Well, it's a little hard to explain. How do you do something without doing it? In other words, don't perform the action of not fighting the war. Don't perform the action of fighting the war, but Krishna wants him to fight the war. Do your duty, do your dharma, but do it without performing any karma. Then it will be counted as non-doing. It will count as if you did nothing. So Krishna is telling him, do nothing but fight the war. So how do you do that? You have to perform that action without attachment in that action. Yasya naham krito bhavo buddhir yasya na lipyate. If someone's mind is not attached in the action they're performing, then na lipyate. They are not bound by that karma. The karma is binding if we're attached to it. We'll talk more about this when we get to the section on the path of karma. We'll talk about good action, bad action, and non-action, which is what Krishna is indicating here. Fight the war, do the good action of fighting the war without being attached in it. Don't have the pride that I am doing. I'm doing a good action. And I'm attached to what I'm going to get for performing that good action. So perform the action without the attachment, and it's like you did nothing. And this doing nothing is also considered surrender. Sharanagati means doing nothing. Now what does this mean for us? It means we have to learn how to do nothing if we want to receive God's grace. Sounds easy, but it's not so easy. Because we're in the habit of doing. And when I say we're in the habit of doing, it means our mind is always attached in our actions. And we always feel a sense of doership, that I'm doing this action. Our ahankar, our pride, is in that action. So if we could learn to perform actions without that, then we could learn to do nothing. In other words, we would become surrendered. Just like, let's say, someone declares bankruptcy, or their business goes into receivership. What happens? They stop doing, and the government takes over. In other words, they're surrendered. Now someone else took over. When one army surrenders to another army, what happens? They put their hands up, drop their weapons, and that army takes them back to their country. Now they're responsible for housing and feeding them. Ab mai kuch nahi karunga. I surrendered to you. Surrender is something like that. Of course, it's not just a matter of physical surrender in the case of a soul and God. But when you surrender in that way, you get total relief. It's like a bird. Let's say there's a bird, a vulture, that picks up a piece of meat and he's flying, or a crow. And all the other crows are chasing him. They all want that. So he's being harassed and hassled. What does he have to do to escape from that? Just drop it. That's it. The second he drops it, all of his troubles go away. So the second we stop doing, all of our troubles go away. All the kaam, krodh, lobh, mad, matsarya, all the mental defilements of maya leave us the second we surrender to God. Surrendering to God happens in stages. It doesn't happen all at once. We may be partially surrendered right now. The goal is to become 100% surrendered. So think of it like a baby. A newborn baby is 100% surrendered to his mother. The baby goes in reverse of the direction we're trying to go. We're partly surrendered, we're trying to become fully surrendered. The baby starts off fully surrendered and becomes less and less and less surrendered to his mother. Initially, the baby can't do anything. Can't even roll over on his own or even hold his own head up straight. If he's sitting, his head goes over like that. His mother has to do everything for him. Hold his head, feed him, wash him, bathe him, clothe him. This is total surrender. That baby doesn't do anything. He soils his diaper. It doesn't matter. Mom will take care of it. I don't do anything. Main kuch nahi karta hun. That's full surrender. As the child grows older, he starts doing more and more for himself, bit by bit. When he gets old enough, imagine if he says, oh, mother, will you bathe me like you used to? What? You're old enough now? I don't bathe you anymore. Do it yourself. So when the child gets older, he becomes more independent and less surrendered to his parents. So as he becomes less surrendered, the parents do less and less for him. Similarly, the less surrendered we are towards God, the less he does for us. Zero surrender, then it's just a case of we're doing karma, God is keeping note, giving the results. That's it, like an accountant. No interference. If we're 10% surrendered, then 90% of it is just our actions and the consequences, and 10% is God's grace. So if we're 10% surrendered, we get 10% God's grace. If we're 50% surrendered, we get 50% grace. And when we become 100% surrendered, then we get 100% of God's grace. So, since surrendering is the same as doing nothing, it's one way of describing how to surrender. You leave it all in God's hands. So, is that really a price for receiving God's grace? That's how we began this, right? If we are being required to surrender in order to receive God's grace, it means God is like a businessman. He's saying, you give me this, then I'll give you that. But what are we giving him? All he says is, do nothing. So we're giving him nothing, and in return, he gives us everything. It's like if let's say someone has a wounded leg, and he's limping along, And then some big, strong bodybuilder comes up behind him and says, hey, let me carry you. Stop walking. In other words, do nothing, and I'll carry you. So if that wounded person says, no, I'm fine, and keeps limping along, in other words, he won't surrender, he won't stop doing, then what can the other person do? He says, okay, when you're ready to surrender, I'm here, I'm waiting. The second he surrenders, he just picks him up and carries him. So his doing nothing, is that a price of receiving that grace? No. Our doing nothing, our surrendering to God, is not a price of receiving His grace. Why can't He make us surrender and just grace all the souls instantaneously? He is all-powerful, isn't He? Kartum akartum anyatha kartum samartha. According to the scriptures, He's all-powerful. He can do anything. He can make all the impossibles possible. But just like we are bound by the material laws of this universe, and we're bound by the law of karma, there's so many things we're bound by, God is also bound by certain divine rules. Is He all-powerful? Yes, but He still exists by... He has a certain nature, right? Just like some philosophers like to question, if God is all-powerful, could God destroy His own self? If He can't destroy Himself, it means He's not all-powerful. There's something He can't do. Philosophers ask such strange questions sometimes. The answer is very simple, though. Can a fire burn itself? A power cannot use its power on itself, meaning and a power cannot act against its own self. It's just nature. So it's impossible for such a thing to happen. And what it means is that whatever is God's nature, whatever are the divine laws, which are a part of God's own personality, God also lives by those laws. There's another funny question philosophers ask. If God is all-powerful, does it mean, could He make a rock so heavy that even He couldn't lift it? What's the sense of asking such things? But they do ask those questions, trying figure out about God. That's what I was talking about, and that's what Ved is saying. When Ved says, you can't understand God with your material intellect. That's what, when a philosopher tries to understand God by asking such questions, it's hopeless. You can go on forever questioning like that. When you reach God, then you can understand such things. So, God follows certain divine rules. He's bound by certain divine rules. And one of those is, He will grace a soul that surrenders to Him, but He cannot make a soul surrender to Him. So He's waiting with open arms. And in order to receive His grace, we can't give any price, even if we wanted to. See, what are we getting when we receive God's grace? We're getting total relief from Maya. We've been bound by Maya since eternity. And the moment we surrender, bhidyate hridaya granthish chidyante sarvasanshraya chiyante chasya karmani tasmin drishte paravare. The Ved says, as soon as you surrender to God and receive His grace, first of all, you meet Him. Tasmin drishte paravare. You get to see God face to face. Chiyante chasya karmani. All of your past karmas are deleted. Remember the other day I was telling you that we have an unlimited stock of sanchit karma and we keep adding to that in every life. And even if we stopped performing new karma today and spent infinite more lifetimes just receiving the consequences of all that sanchit karma, even then it would never ever run out. God deletes that whole entire thing. That's the only way. Sarva dharman parityajya mamekam sharanam braja aham tvam sarva papebhyo mokshayishyami ma shuchah. Gita. The moment you surrender, Shri Krishna says, I delete all of your past pap and punya. All of your past karma is deleted. So with his grace, upon surrendering, a soul is freed from all his past karma and all future karma. In other words, nothing you do will ever be counted as karma again. You're totally free from the bondage of karma. You're free from maya. Right now you're bound by maya, so according to the karma you perform, you have to be reborn again and again. You're free from that. Never to be born under maya again. You are relieved from tritap. I had explained to you that every being suffers three types of tap. Adhyatmik, adhibhautik, adhidaivik. All three of those are eliminated and a soul never suffers again after surrendering to God. This physical body is replaced with a divine body when we go to the divine world. Our material senses are replaced with divine senses. Our material mind is replaced with the divine mind. We get all of that for what? For doing nothing. For surrendering. And even if we wanted to give some payment, let's say, okay, God, maybe I can't pay for the whole thing. You've given me so much. Let me at least pay for part of it. Let me do something for you. What can we do? What do we have to offer God in return for all of that? Everything He's relieved us of, all the types of bondage and suffering, and everything He's given us. Unlimited life, unlimited knowledge, unlimited bliss, entrance to His divine abode. What can we give in return for that? Whatever we have. What do we have? Material body, material mind, material possessions. So what is the value of those things for God? Our material body is... humko bhar lagta hai, hum bhagwan ko denge. This body is always giving us some kind of pain. It's so hard to keep clean. It's always smelling badly. I have to keep cutting our nails, trimming our hair, washing our skin, washing our mouth. Out of every pore, dirt comes. Our body's constantly eliminating poisons through our pores, through our breath, through... This is what we're going to offer God? This thing? And that's just what we see from the outside. Doctors know. If you cut open here and look inside, what's in there? Nobody wants to see that. Nobody wants to know about that. And we're going to offer this to God as payment for what? So what else do we have to offer? Our mind. Now, as dirty as our body is, the mind is even dirtier. Because it's the storehouse of all of our past pap. All of our past sins are stored right in here, in our antahkaran. So offering that to God is not any more appealing than offering our body. And possessions, it already belongs to Him. That could be said for all of this. Our body, our mind, our possessions. But the possessions, where did they come from? God's good green earth. We accumulated possessions from God's earth and we call it mine. It's already His. We're going to give Him back what's already His or what He's given us temporary possession of and then feel like, oh, I've given God something. So we have nothing to offer Him and He has everything to give us. So even though we don't have anything really of value to offer him, but he says, whatever you have, give it to me. That's also surrender. But the main form of surrender is mental surrender. Not just physical surrender, offering your body, meaning, okay, you can come to the mandir and do pranam. So that's like a physical surrender. That's not enough. Where is grace received? Grace is actually received in your antahakaran, in your mind, or you can say your heart. So that's the vessel into which we want to receive grace. Now we're getting a little more deeply into this philosophy of kripa. When we say, I surrender and God graces, where do we receive the grace? In here, in your antahakaran. So it's your antahakaran, your man, that has to be surrendered. Once you receive the grace in your antahakaran, it gets purified. So actually, that surrender in stages, in percentages, what happens is if you're 10% surrendered, it means your mind is 10% surrendered to God. So you've received 10% grace and your antahakaran has purified. Remember I told you our antahakaran is impure from all of our uncountable past lifetimes. So how to purify it? As we surrender to God, it gradually purifies. 10% surrender, 10% grace, 10% purification. Then we become more surrendered, 50% surrendered, 50% grace, 50% purification. Once our mind is 100% surrendered, we get 100% grace, and it means it's been 100% purified. That is the moment of God realization. So in effect, what we're doing, surrendering means surrendering your mind. If you surrender your body but not your mind, how will your mind get cleaned? Bowing down before God is good if it brings up the feeling of surrender in your mind. It's supposed to help you feel surrendered towards God, because He can't grace you anywhere in your body. He has to grace you in your antahakaran. Just like there's a mantra that goes, Shri Krishna Sharanam Mama. It means, Shri Krishna is my shelter, my refuge, and I am surrendered to Him. So that's verbal surrender. But just like you can do pranam to Bhagwan and not be mentally surrendered, you can also say a mantra like that and not mentally surrender. So verbal surrender or physical surrender are not true surrender. They won't result in receiving God's grace. Mental surrender is what's required. So it means, what God is asking from us is to give Him our mind. Mayyarpita mano buddhi. He says in the Gita, Arjun, give me your man, give me your buddhi. Give your mind to me. Aap kya karenge wo sab lekar? Why does He want our mind? What's He going to do with it? You know what He's going to do with it? Clean it, fill it with divine grace, and give it back to us. That's what. So again, coming back to this question of why does God demand surrender? Isn't that selfish that He wants something from us first before He graces us? Would it be selfish if a dhobi washed your clothes for free? That's what God is doing. He's doing ye dhobi ka kaam hai. He's taking our ganda antahakaran, cleaning it, and giving it back to us free of charge. But at least we have to hand it over to Him, right? The dhobi is willing to wash your clothes for free, so give it to Him. Let Him wash it. God is willing to clean our heart for free, but we have to give it to Him. We have to surrender it to Him. Thus you see that surrendering to God is not a selfish condition. This is why God is called Akaran Karun. He's not getting anything from us by us surrendering to Him. In fact, it's work for Him. Okay, now this soul surrenders his mind, I clean it, I give it divine power and give it back to Him. See, He's doing all the work on our behalf. It's like if you're driving the car and you're intoxicated and the owner is sitting in the back and he sees you swerving all over. He says, hey, stop, I'll drive. So you get out, you sit in the back and you lie back and relax and let Him drive. That's surrender. Let God take over. So if we surrender our mind to Him, through His grace, He purifies it. He gives us all divine qualities in our mind. When it's fully purified, He gives us absolute divine knowledge and divine bliss. And He does all of that free of charge. But we have to surrender our mind to Him. It's like if you want to collect rainwater, and you have a bucket, and you take the bucket out into the storm and turn it upside down in the hopes of collecting water. And once it's been out there for a while and you go out and then you start yelling at the storm clouds, hey, I want some water. What's the matter with you? Why aren't you giving me any water? The storm clouds would say, well, turn your bucket right side up. If our heart is turned away from God, how can He grace us? It's like covering up in a watertight rain suit. You'll stay dry. It doesn't matter how hard it rains. So it doesn't matter how much kripa is showering. If our heart is closed to that grace, we can't receive it. Someone may be giving away an unlimited supply of free milk. Anyone come and take. How much you want? Just bring that big of a container. And we go with a container that's cracked, has holes in the bottom. He says, what can I give you in that? You can't hold anything in that container. At least bring a proper container to receive the free milk I'm giving away. In the same way, God is saying, free grace. Have as much kripa as you want for free, no charge. But you have to bring the patra, the proper vessel to receive it. So that's this, antahkaran. Right now our vessel is not proper, it's not complete. But however much we can surrender to God, He helps us become patra. He helps patch up the cracks and the holes so our heart becomes a fit vessel for His grace. Then we can get God realized. So receiving God's grace requires us to turn towards Him. That's another way of looking at it. Doing nothing is kind of an abstract way of thinking about it. Something more concrete that we can really feel is if you think of desire or attachment. Desire, attachment, and love are all different words for the same thing. Why do we get attached? When we believe that we can get happiness from a certain person or a certain thing, we get attached to that. Wherever we become attached, we feel a feeling of love. And why did that develop in the first place? Because of our desire. We desired to get happiness from that. We kept thinking about it. That developed an attachment to that person or thing, and that attachment is experienced as a feeling of love. This is all a form of surrender. That's the point I'm making. Right now, we're more surrendered in the world than we are to God. Because we believe we will get happiness from this world. We've been thinking about that many times in this life, millions of times. and many millions of times in all of our past lifetimes. Thus, we've developed a very deep attachment to this world, very deep. Which means we are surrendered to this world. Our hope is turned towards the world. And if we're turned towards the world, it means our back is turned to God. There's only three things that exist according to the Vedas. Us, the souls, God, and Maya. So if we're turned towards Maya, it means we're turned away from God. Either you'll find happiness in God or you'll find happiness in the world. Which of those have you made your mind up to do? Up until now, our mind has been made up in this way that I'm going to find happiness from this world. I didn't do it today, but I'll do it tomorrow. It's just out of my reach. I'm going to get it. In this way, we're fully surrendered to this world. Surrender also means dependence, hope. Where is our hope? Where is our dependence, emotional dependence? If it's in the world, we're surrendered to the world. So to become surrendered to God, we have to start increasing our attachment to Him by increasing our hope of finding happiness from Him, become more dependent on Him emotionally than this world. This is a process that takes time. It's just like that bucket I was saying. Right now, God's grace is all around us. Why aren't we getting God realized? Because our heart is not surrendered to God. It's surrendered to the world. So we are vimukh from Bhagwan, sunmukh to the world. We have to gradually turn towards God. Once we're fully turned towards Him, instantly we get God realization. But like I said, this is a process that takes time. In order to make this process move forward, there is a path you have to follow, and we'll be talking about the paths to God, karma, jnana, and bhakti, later on in this series of speeches. Before we get into that, we have to talk about a couple more things. We need a little more knowledge, because we're talking about desiring God instead of desiring this world. So first of all, that brings up, we need more knowledge. What is this world about, really? Why do we have such a faith of finding happiness in this world? Is there happiness in the world? Yes or no? If yes, why? Prove it to me. If no, why? Prove it to me. Only when we understand such things, and also when we understand more about God, only then we'll start naturally transferring our hope and attachment from the world towards God. This knowledge is required in order to do that. And we also need to remove some more doubts about God. Because if we have doubts about God's graciousness, kindness, blissfulness, then how will we become surrendered? So just like Tulsidas ji says, Jane binu na hoi paratiti, binu paratiti hoi nahi priti. If you don't understand properly about God, how will you have faith in Him? And without faith in Him, how will you love Him? So we need to understand some more things about God that commonly people doubt. One of those doubts is, if God is gracious and perfect and blissful, how did this world, which is so full of suffering, come from God? He is said to be the creator of the world. So if He created this world, how did a perfect God create an imperfect world? Number one. Number two, if God is truly omnipresent within us and without us, then, and He is bliss, how is it that we have never even tasted a drop of that bliss? This is also a big question when it comes to having faith in God. If you tell people God is everywhere, people want to know, well, then why can't I see Him? Why can't I taste that bliss? I can't experience Him at all. And you're telling me He's everywhere? And when I look around this world, I see so much suffering. And you tell me that there's a God and He's actually in this world and He's the creator of this world. People have big doubts about God. It makes it difficult for them to have faith in God. And if you have those kind of doubts and lack of faith, then how will you become surrendered to God? So we have to clear up these doubts before we move forward. And we'll continue with this tomorrow. बोलिए वृंदावन बिहारी लाल की।